if you know the devil's advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
I kind of feel like Brian is trolling me at this point because that's the second time that he's dropped in a line from Anchorman. And as somebody who was the news anchor in Eau Claire at the time that Anchorman came out, based mostly on my life, I do want to say, because Ron Burgundy just sounds better than Pat Kreitlow. It just flows better off the tongue. But yeah, I said that all the time. I'd walk into bars and go, you know, I need a free drink because I'm a pretty big deal. And it worked every time. Well, 60% of the time, it worked every time.
Nice.
Hey, I got to tell you, I lived in L.A. when they were drawing Wreck-It Ralph. So I'm just going to leave that there and just say that there are certain times during the movie that I'm like, wow. Especially like over-the-shoulder shots. My God, They got me really good.
I do have, and I suppose I'll have to at some point take it out of the basement. It's probably somewhere next to the toaster oven and the bread maker. But the coworkers did alter a movie poster of Anchorman. So in the red blazer, the burgundy blazer, they've got
the
my
mustache,
face.
Pat, you got to get the mustache if you really mean it.
Now that would be a stretch, but you know if that's what I got to do, still have the conch shell, you know, where I assemble the news team. They just can't hear me now. They're farther away and far afield. But all right, well, thanks for that. Thanks for the reminder of what I once was in a past life. But I'm very happy now to have worked my way to Up North News, helped found that. We've had some great reporters come through over the 2.5 years that we've been up on air. We're part of a network called Courier Newsroom with outlets in 8 states total. And it was from a couple of these other sister outlets, Dom in Michigan and North Carolina, that came the story that we actually put up on Up North News this afternoon that I wanted to share with folks and just do some shameless promotion for, because not only is it a great written story, but it's based on an interview and we're putting up videos of it as well. And that's because we're talking about a pro-choice pastor by the name of the Reverend Katie Zay. And she grew up in an evangelical family. Then after college and divinity school, is now a pro-choice pastor in North Carolina and has worked her way up to be CEO of the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. It's a national organization of faith leaders that advocates for reproductive freedom and dignity, including abortion rights. And it provides direct care to people seeking abortions, including spiritual care and accompaniment. And she talks to us all about how she came to her pro-choice views. And it was sometime after seminary when she was put on an assignment to basically work with or counsel women who were seeking out abortion health care. And she tells very powerfully the story of going there as a young woman herself, going to talk to these women. But of course, all the people demonstrating around didn't know that. They didn't know she was a new pastor. And so they're heckling her and jeering her and telling her not to do it. And she said it was a real awakening that these are people calling themselves Christians who were trying to make her life hell. And at that point, based on that and what she learned inside the clinic about the very essential nature of reproductive health care, that she decided that this was what she wanted to do, was to help women and help defend their rights. She talks about how her own faith journey is part of her own deconstruction journey of being raised in an environment where gender roles were very specific, with very strict sexual ethics, compared to what she's, you know, since learned. And that is, you know, that you know, the teachings of Jesus would be of such that he would be with those women in their time of trouble. He would be counseling with them. So I'd urge folks to check out that story because, Dom, as we look at the potential demise of Roe v. Wade, we're going to have to be talking about the people like her who are going to be the community leaders that are still going to look out for individuals. And one more side note on that, today happens to be the anniversary of not Roe v. Wade, but a decision that led up to that, Griswold v. Connecticut. Prior to that, even married people could be banned from contraceptives. And Griswold v. Connecticut was the first to find a right to privacy in the Constitution. It's not explicitly stated, but you find it when you read through the body of several related amendments And the court said married couples do have a right to privacy. It's none of your business whether they use contraception or not. Remember, this was a time when single women couldn't get contraception either. The laws were eventually changed.
How is it anyone's business? Whether you're married or not married, or you have three wives or no wives or four husbands
or lots of partners.
I mean, how is it anybody's business whatsoever at all? You know, what you or I or our spouses, what we do with regards to contraception, sexual ethics. I didn't know there was a thing. I mean, how does anybody else, if they want to live their life, that's fine. But when they start to try to mandate that I follow in their footsteps, whatever crazy ass belief mythology that might be, that's where we start, you know, having some problems. I'm down with freedom of religion. Knock yourself out. Pay your property taxes. That'd be nice.
Right.
You know, but you know, whatever gets you through the day, but don't think you got to throw that on me. All these Christian nationalists are all concerned about Sharia law. What about canon law? You know, I don't want to be living under any sort of fascistic authoritarianism of any mythology or religion.
And that's where we run into trouble because, again, there are. Remember how I said a little bit ago, people are looking for the explicit words from Donald Trump, I committed treason. That's not going to happen. You know, it's not like everybody who comes in and says, I'm robbing this bank. It doesn't get explicit all the time. You need to read the signals. The same can be said about the right to privacy. It is something that is fundamental to being an American, to what makes our society and our culture work is that right to privacy. That, you know, again, it's so the irony is just crazy here that big government cannot come in and tell you what to do. And that for some reason, people have no problem saying that about, you know, business. Big government can't come in and tell me about my business. But these are the same folks that want big government coming in and judging what you do in the bedroom. And deciding what you can and can't do with the effects of that. And so it is on this day of that Griswold v. Connecticut anniversary that we need to be very mindful of our right to privacy and things that are not explicitly enumerated in the Constitution.
Other than what's in the Constitution is not explicitly enumerated in the Constitution. So you're going to tell me everything else all of a sudden must be written down? Of course, that's asinine.
Right. I mean, airplanes aren't mentioned. So are airplanes illegal? Should there not be an Air Force because it's not mentioned in the Constitution? So, yeah, this mindset of, you know, strict constructionist has got to be stopped. There is a school of thought for, you know, author's intent, but the authors also owned people. They churned their own butter. You know, the world has changed a lot. And if you don't treat the Constitution as a living, breathing document that keeps up with the times, then you're making the case that you want to go back to a late 1700s mindset where women didn't vote, where they were practically property, where men who didn't own land didn't vote. And you know, frankly, if there's one thing I've learned.
Isn't that what they want, Pat? I mean, yes.
That's what some people want.
That's what they want. Yes.
Yes,
women should know their place. Get out of line. I mean, when you talk about this author that you had, or this pastor that talked about helping and engaging with those in need of abortive services, and her own upbringing, right? She had to deconstruct her own upbringing because what was it? Very patriarchal, right? Very, very religious. I mean, one would say indoctrinated, perhaps even groomed, depends on what your flavor is. But at least she has the wherewithal to evaluate. A lot of people don't, not just in this country, certainly around the world. And I think that's some of the freedoms, you know, to be able to criticize your own government, your own country is one of the greatest freedoms you could possibly have, without fear of death or reprisal. That is something worth fighting for. It's about, you know, engaging with in self governance. But the influence of the religion, Pat. And I don't think this is talked about enough, not through the J6 insurrection, the riot, or even, you know, the abortion and all the thoughts that a lot of the right wingers have are fundamentally based in some Christian belief of whatever. And I, as the atheist on the panel here, man, again, whatever gets them through the day is fine. But now they want to use that as their justification to push legislation to mandate through government force that I engage in the same religious-esque behavior that they do. And
it's It's really
using the government in that way is exactly what they claim they don't want, Pat.
And so that's where I was glad to see again one of the quotes that she has here says that what I would invite abortion critics to do is really listen to the stories of people who have experienced abortion, for whom it was a life-saving part of their lives, even a blessing. Be open-hearted to experiences that you might not have considered before. As people of faith, we are asked to keep open hearts and to love and to suspend our judgments and to be compassionate. So asking them just to talk to someone who's had an abortion experience and see if that maybe opens their minds a little bit. And again, to open those minds means we have to have conversations with people with whom we may disagree. We may disagree so strongly with the path that they're on, but to put a legal bulldozer in the way simply because, you know, their values are not your values goes against everything that we've created this country on. We created this country on life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and yet we're looking the other way as children are slaughtered. Well, there's no liberty in pursuit of happiness if you don't have life. And there's no pursuit of happiness if there's no liberty for women to have control over their own bodies. These are fundamental things, like you said, that shouldn't even have to be debated. But the fact that they do means we have to have these conversations.
844-967-2789. Let's get to the lines. Matt from Johnson's Creek, you are up. Welcome, sir. What do you got for us?
To point it out on, I think I read where I read it, but it's an idea that I've never really considered. The fact that the First Amendment, the Bill of Rights, starts with Congress shall make no law, right? But you move to the Second Amendment, there's no mention of Congress anywhere. And I've been thinking about it in the last few days, that deep dive into what they actually mean about, you know, originalist intent and things like that. And it's just, I can't believe I never noticed it, that it specifically says Congress shall make no law, you know, religion and petition the government and freedom of the press, but it doesn't say that in the Second Amendment. And I was hoping to get you guys' take on that.
I guess I've always taken it as that it was implied, you know, that the right shall not be infringed is more or less the wording in there. So it just seems like they were, it's more of a writing style. If I'm going to act as a journalist here and a writing coach, but again, you know, that those aren't the words in the Second Amendment that get to me, that again boggle my mind. It's the part about the well-regulated militia. What part of well-regulated are these people missing? When Van Wongard appeared on Capital City Sunday this past weekend and said he still does not support red flag laws, he still does not support universal background checks, but he does think he might favor letting teachers have loaded guns in classrooms, that's not a well-regulated militia, as far as I can see, Tom.
No, man. No, and it's preposterous. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, front-end loaded, you know, muzzle rifles, right? I mean, we're talking about weapons of war, and we're talking about matters of degree, and I think that cannot be lost. We don't have Tommy guns. You know, I cannot go and purchase a howitzer artillery system, right? Mm-hmm. We can't get suitcase nukes, right? So all of those things are weapons of war. You could construe and say, well, I got a right to all that because my rifle isn't about, you know, shooting deer. It's about, you know, overthrowing a tyrannical government. But if you already accept the fact that you can't have a tank or a howitzer, you know, the government has those things. So your AR-15 isn't going to shoot down the jet. It's not going to stop the howitzer shells. You've already accepted a certain amount of regulation. You've already accepted a governmental approach to what you can and cannot have. All you got to do is take it one step further.
It reminds me of the tweet that really moved me the other day. Said, you know, this whole notion of I need my gun to guard against a government. Government's got drones now that can wipe out people with your right. Your little AR-15 back comparison. So that argument, just not that good anymore. Dom's here along with Pat Kreitlow filling in for Crudy. We'll be back in a moment.
What is that smell?
Oh, it's a formidable scent.
You can taste it.
You know, desire smells like that to some people.
It's tremendously big and tremendously wet.
Why don't you stop talking for a while?
Maybe sit the next couple plays.